This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. The goal on here is to make listeners aware of interesting companies, smart people, and new technology developments, all of them meaningful in making digital signage projects happen. I try to help listeners understand sometimes complicated subjects and why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but things happen now and then. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 69 has been around since 2006, and the publication and podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which provides customer engagement solutions for business. You can find them at spectrio.com. When I first spoke with Jonathan LeBay about the grand-scale media facades and displays being produced by Seiko Technologies, the Sphere in Las Vegas was just yet another over-the-top thing rising up from the desert sands. 2 years on, and a few months after the giant LED ball was first switched on, the Sphere is probably the most discussed and photographed digital display on the planet. So I was very happy that LeBay was willing to carve out some time for me to talk about some of the technical details behind the display side of that project, and more broadly about what it has meant for the Montreal company and for the concept of buildings as media facades and visual attractions. In this podcast, we get into some of the technical challenges and innovations associated with putting together both the attention-getting outside exosphere of the building, but also the mind-wobbling 9mm pitch curved display that's inside. We also talk about the larger business and the opportunities and challenges of turning big structures into experiential digital displays. John, thanks for joining me. It's been a couple of years, but a lot has gone on with your company. And obviously, the big thing is the involvement of it in Sphere in Las Vegas. I know we can't spend all of our time talking about that, nor do I want to, but I would imagine your work, your company's work on that has kind of rocked the industry.
It has, and thanks for having me back, Dave. Sphere has been an incredible journey for us. I think 2 years ago when we last spoke, we were just about to start on our part of the construction, and we've successfully delivered that project, which is, I think there was a lot of people and projects that were in the waiting to see if something of this magnitude could be pulled off successfully. Mm-hmm. And now that it has awoken a new level of giant projects around the world. And I'm going to say mostly in the Middle East at this moment in time. Mm-hmm.
And why is that? Is it just about money, or is it also about things like zoning controls and, you know, available space?
Well, I mean, obviously money and budget is always a concern, but I think, you know, I think when you get past the level of, you know, installing a giant television, say, on the side of a building, and where the building itself is a medium, I don't know if you can say that, but and the infrastructure to support that is so significant in your construction budget, I think this is one of the key aspects for these developers and these architects to understand if it could successfully be done. Now, from a zoning perspective, I think that a project like the Sphere is quite revealing in the sense of how much control do you have over brightness and the type of and the quality of the content, and kind of secures the knowledge that, you know, a responsible owner can display tasteful content in the environment that it's designed to be in.
Mm-hmm. And I know that there was a proposal to do a similar project in the East End of London, and that doesn't seem to be going ahead, at least at the moment. And it struck me as one of the barriers to it was simply that you're putting up a very bright object within reasonably close proximity to residential, and that's a challenge.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm not a politician by any means, but I do think there's some politics there, and also maybe some fear of new technology that could potentially be disruptive if used in an irresponsible way. But, you know, normally people that spend this amount of money on a venue tend to have a very secure plan to fit within their environment.
So what was done for Sphere was custom. Could you kind of relate what was done on the outside and then on the inside? And the inside is particularly interesting to me because your company's pedigree is not so much on fine pitch, you know, large displays other than for touring acts, which are not as fine a pitch.
Well, yeah, so it's actually pretty interesting that this seems to be the our persona. The reality is that most of our development is done on fine pitch products.
Okay.
We just happen to have been doing quite a bit of let's call it low res or wide pitch products because we've been doing so many iconic buildings. It seems to be what we're known for. Mm-hmm. But if you take, for example, a lot of the touring acts or some of the video screens that we did for Orlando Airport, for example, those are 2 millimeter pixel pitch, custom curve, and all these types of things. So if we go back to Sphere, the exterior of the Sphere, or what we refer to as the exosphere, is made up of these pucks, I would say, that have 48 LEDs per, and each one of these pucks is a pixel that is controllable for the client, and that's what gives you like that beautiful imagery on the building. And it also has an aesthetic that the architects wanted and the client wanted, where it allows you to see through and see the base building through the exosphere. So the performance criteria for the exterior was one thing, whereas the performance criteria for the interior was completely different. It needed to be audio transparent, because if you go to the sphere, there is absolutely no speakers or any kind of disruption and on the media plane. Everything is behind the screen, so it gives you a very, very pure environment. Mm-hmm. And the screen itself is nominal 9 millimeter, but it is 16K by 16K resolution. And because of the distance, everything just works. When you're inside of that environment, you feel like you're wherever the artist or content creator decides that you're going to be. So if you're on Mars or another part of the planet, you feel like you're there.
Mm-hmm. For the exosphere, because this had not really ever been done, or certainly not done very often, was there a kind of an engineering kind of thought process about how do we make this work? Will it work? What are the sight lines? All that sort of stuff.
Oh yes, and as much as I want to take a lot of credit for this, I mean it was definitely a collective effort. First of all, we're dealing with a very sophisticated client that has a lot of knowledge and capabilities. Same goes for the architects and all the other trades that were involved. So we had the opportunity to work with an expanded group of people that had a lot of knowledge and capability to visualize these types of things, and we have done mock-up over mock-up over mock-up. So it's not just let's think about it and build it. It's let's think about it, let's prototype it, let's prove it, let's adapt it, let's modify it, and eventually you know through the process of iteration you end up with something that is functional for that particular mission.
So what was it like, the big moment? I think it was July of last year, or maybe a bit earlier, when you first turned it on. Were there fingers crossed, or was it a big aha?
Well, I can tell you when the client first turned on that exosphere, I think it was like a huge wow moment for everybody, including ourselves. It was spectacular. And then when we had the chance of going to the opening for U2 for the interior, which was the end of September, that I got to tell you was pretty emotional. I don't think that any one of us could have imagined what it would look like in its finished format.
Yeah, because you've done some grand scale indoor stuff for touring acts, you know, stadiums and so on, which are pretty big ass screens, but nothing along these lines, right?
Nope, there is there's nothing on Earth in our industry that exists of this level of magnitude. And again, I mean, we've been working on this for 5 years, and we see it in sections, and we see the whole master plan. We see all this stuff on computer screens or in real life as mock-ups. But when you see the finished scale on the interior, it is mind-boggling.
How do you service something like that? Like, is it just like man lifts or Lord knows what?
Well, the venue is obviously designed with service capability.
Okay.
So you know, I mean, at the end of the day, how did they say? How do you eat an elephant? Is basically one bite at a time, and it's pretty much what this is. I mean, it's a lot of the same type of stuff. So you know, so everything is broken down into sections, and if you had a problem, you need to go service. You want to go look at something. You have access to that section in a particular fashion, and then you have access to the screen, and you can do whatever you need to do.
I'm curious as well about some of the meat and potato stuff, like video servers. Like, how do you develop something that can control that many LED modules, you know, and make it all addressable and everything? Was when you went to your technical partners on that, was it a big, oh boy, how do we do that? Or was it, okay, we know how we could do that?
Yeah, I think it was more of a, oh yeah, we know how we can do that because our video processors are scalable in nature. They technically don't have a limit. But then again, it's not just our stuff that needs to function. It's everything up and down the chain. So we control from the video processor all the way to the video screen, but everything that's upstream from us also has to function. And here again, Sphere Studios or MSG, they designed and created their very own control room with all of the workflow to function. So from beginning to end, they have full control on the quality of the signal.
What about the creative? I assume that this takes a certain set of skills and experience is very helpful to produce this stuff. And is it hard to do, or is just you kind of get instructions on what to do and then you make it happen?
Yeah, my understanding is that Sphere Studios put together some templating and also they have their own production services that they offer to the clients to make the ease of producing content a lot easier. So people are not just thrown into the project. They're helped all
right
along the way. Yeah.
One of the things that's impressed me with the project is the type of content that's showing up on there that I think me, like millions of other people, never would have even thought of that. Have you been surprised by it?
Yeah, I gotta say those guys have done an incredible job of coming up with some very interesting and creative ways of making that sphere look amazing. And you really never get tired of looking at it. I mean, it's populating my Instagram feed and probably everybody else's. And it's just incredible what they're able to put on there. And I think that they've been very clever in getting collaborations from different types of artists and collaborators.
When I was through Las Vegas late last year, I made a point of walking all the way over to Sphere because I wanted to see what it looked like up close. And I have an industry friend who did the same. And it's this weird sensation of, okay, now I see how this works and what the technology looks like up close. But it was almost like that's something you shouldn't do. You really need to see this from a distance.
Yeah, and it was designed to be seen from a distance. But I think that it's very interesting, and I'm not sure this was, I mean, I can't say that this was like planned in this way, but I mean, obviously we're looking for performance criteria, so we design around that and a certain aesthetic, and probably the architects have thought about this, but as you approach the building and you start seeing how things are put together, there's a sense of revelation that you get when you approach the building, and it becomes a lot more, even more personable to you. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was pretty interesting because I had a similar experience when I went there for the first time.
So what has this spawned? Do you have commercial property developers coming to you, resort operators, or who seems to be most inspired by this?
Well, yeah, I would say that, I mean, the Sphere certainly awoke a new level of client and types of projects. We normally work with the architects, so the architects who represent the owners and the property developers are coming to us with more and more intricate and large projects, which is super fun, because not only have we developed technology, but we've designed an entire workflow and tool set in order to design and efficiently manufacture and install and run these types of projects. So yes, I mean, we're getting large resorts, and the Middle East right now is in a big flux of change, especially in Saudi Arabia. So there's a lot of these giga projects or mega projects that are spawning all over the place. So we're getting a lot of inquiries on that side, which is great.
And are they serious? Like the sometimes you see these mega projects in other jurisdictions, and there's a lot of PR noise around it, but nothing ever happens. But I suspect because some of these are funded directly by the Saudi government through PIF or whatever, that, like they're going to happen.
Yeah, I think I think in the past that was maybe a bit more true, that there was kind of these big dreams and then they would just never materialize. But I think things have changed a lot in the region, where projects are actually getting built. There's there seems to be a big sense of change in the entire region, and Dubai and Abu Dhabi and that part of the world still continues to be very strong for us as well. So we have we're lucky in the fact that we're already out there, and we've already delivered successful anchor projects like Burj Khalifa and such.
For over a decade, ScreenFeed has been the reliable choice for beautifully designed, licensed content such as news and weather. We handle over 27 million requests a day to deliver dynamic content to 200,000 screens across the globe. Now, we bring you ScreenFeed Connect, a no-code solution that makes complex content projects easy. Projects that used to take our designers and developers weeks became a to-do we could complete before lunch. The easy-to-use browser-based tool leverages pre-built data connections and ready-made widgets to give you the power to design with data. Create team member profiles, schedules, tenant directories, progress boards, featured products, or anything that leverages your data. Discover how Connect empowers you to complete projects faster at screenfeed.com.
All is involved in doing these. Like, is this like a 3 or 5 year project?
So I would say that normally this would have been a 3 year project. Obviously, the pandemic happened, which no one had anticipated, drove all sorts of additional complexities and time. But I would say that a project like this, I believe, originally had like a 3 year type of time frame. And any mega project would have roughly the same type of time frame.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's interesting to me is, as we were discussing before, that maybe people don't know the full scope of what your company does. I didn't realize you had off-the-shelf product that you manufacture and you can order and all that. I kind of assumed it was all custom, but there is stuff that you can just buy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a whole suite of products that are, you can either utilize the way that they are, or that you can customize, say, brackets and carriers and these types of things. And it is actually the bulk of our business is that, although we publicize more the iconic type of projects, simply because they people like to hear about those. But we do several hundred projects a year that are, obviously much smaller and sometimes not as much talked about.
And are those fixed projects, or are they more about shipping out material that's going to be used by touring act?
No, these are fixed projects. I mean, touring for us, although we do a lot of touring, like we just literally launched Morgan Wallen last week with our new A5 series. Amazing product and amazing show. But touring for us is really great, obviously, for recognition, but is a fantastic place for us to try out new ideas. So it is really like an R&D lab. And that's why we continue to put so much effort into touring, rental and touring. We get to try out new ideas with clients that are willing to take chances and want to be the first. And then once you have something great, you refine it and you make it more robust for permanent installation, because in permanent installation, the criteria are quite different. You don't want to go up 1,000 feet to change a light bulb, for example, no. Right? That becomes very expensive. Whereas on a tour, it's up for a few hours. You can take it down. You can address things if you needed to. You know, so there's a method to our madness, I would say.
Is there linkage at all between, because you're a Montreal company, there's at least a couple of Montreal creative shops that mm-hmm. have also done a lot of work with touring acts as well. Do those kind of come together, or are they kind of separate tracks and once in a while you bump into each other?
Yeah, so they are separate tracks, and oftentimes we bump into each other. So, for example, when we did Orlando Airport, the content designers for that was Jean Thiam,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, who we know very well. We have, you know, obviously Moment Factory and a bunch of other creatives out here. So there's a really nice hub here, and we're all friends, by the way. Right, so we all have lunch together and these types of things, because it's fun to talk about whatever we're working on.
Going back to Sphere, the product that you developed, particularly for the Exosphere,
yes,
is that something that you can turn around and productize, like turn into its own product that could be used, or is it really unique to that building?
It is unique to the building. It has certain features that are specifically designed around the geometry of that building.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that those additional features would probably be lost if we were attempting to use it somewhere else. But in any case, it's not something that we would want to do with it. It has not only a technological criteria to it, but it has an aesthetic criteria to it that is
right.
unique to Sphere. Yeah.
But the concept though of these kinds of pucks or
yep.
discs of some kind that have LEDs embedded in it. I believe what you did at Burj Khalifa was kind of like sticks or something more?
Yeah, exactly. So Burj Khalifa, because it was a linear type of approach, it was a product that we call a V-Stick that we customized for that particular building. But if you take LA Stadium, for example, or SoFi Stadium, mm-hmm. that has a puck format on the roof. There's, I think, like 35,000 of them, and you get a video image on the roof when you're flying above from LAX.
So anytime you've got curvature, a puck is probably going to be a lot easier to manage than a stick, because you'd have to custom bend each of them, right?
Yes, but it also depends what the client is trying to achieve. So, you know, if you take SoFi Stadium, they wanted to have an even spacing of the pixels. Whereas Burj Khalifa had a very different criteria. It's 30,000 pixels tall, but by only 72 pixels wide, because we had to install them in between the windows, so on the architectural fins. So each project kind of reveals itself in its architecture in terms of what product or what you should be designing to achieve their media.
When you're working with architectural firms, do you have to invest some time at the front end with the architects, particularly on the engineering side of it, as opposed to the big vision side of it, for them to understand what's possible and, you know, what's physics defying?
I would say yes in the beginning, but we've worked with all of the major architect firms like Foster and Populous and those types. And, the more and more projects that we do together, the more and more do we understand each other's criteria. Now, on our side, what we did to make sure that we could have an ease in speaking with the architects, we have an entire architectural division within Seiko. So we have a Spanish office that has seven architects and BIM integrators and computational programmers and so on, which mimics the workflow of the architects. So not only do we work with them to show them what's possible, we actually work with them to design in the technology within the architecture. And then we are able to produce the drawings at their level, which they then incorporate in their drawing sets.
I'm guessing, I don't know the architecture business at all, but I'm guessing maybe a decade ago, there were one or two projects where people were thinking about architectural lighting of some kind, and you know, it was this novel concept. And I'm wondering now if it's almost like a default concept for all, flashy new buildings?
Well, it is. If you want your building to stand out, you have to have some level of technology on it or some level of color or something, because if not, you just fade into the background.
And what does that, I guess I come back to the whole idea of zoning that I see skylines in China.
Yep.
That are, it's just like the whole skyline, every building is lit up and they're all animated and they're all doing things. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, well, you can do that in China. I'm not sure you could do that in Long Island City in New York to face the Manhattan skyline with buildings doing that. Do you have to kind of factor that in?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, actually, like obviously anything governmental kind of tends to move at a slower pace. So we have built into our workflow and into the architect's workflow the sensibility of making some tools and visualizations for the city zoning people. And a perfect example of that would be FC Cincinnati, which we did with Populous. Mm-hmm. So FC Cincinnati is a soccer club.
MLS team.
Yeah, exactly. And the entire architecture of the building is kind of like these fins that are kind of slanted, and it gives like some level of static movement to the building. And our job was to animate those fins at night to give the nighttime identity. So we did an entire lighting study, and we have special filters built into the content into the content player, so that anywhere where it's facing residences, the light levels never exceed a certain amount.
Okay.
Okay. So we produced all of that, all of those studies with the architects to present to the city on behalf of the client.
And what's the thinking around what level of, well, for lack of a more exotic description, razzle dazzle is appropriate? Because I'm thinking in Las Vegas, Sphere makes perfect sense. That's mm-hmm. that's kind of on brand for Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that would make as much sense in San Francisco or Minneapolis or whatever. And I have a lot of affection for much more subtle architectural lighting.
Yeah. So, you have to think of, Sphere is the extreme, right? It has
for now.
It has a completely adaptive skin. So the skin, when there's no media on it, obviously is kind of this dark surface.
Mm-hmm.
But the media at that point is designed for the environment. So in Las Vegas, it's appropriate to have these very kind of flashy razzle-dazzle stuff. But if you were doing something in San Francisco or in the UK or something like this, where you needed to be more subtle, the content would move maybe at a different speed. The mm-hmm. content would be produced in a different manner. Maybe they'll be more, maybe more focused on lighting effects rather than full crazy, commercials and that kind of thing. So having an adaptive skin is actually a really good thing in any environment, because then you can tailor it and you can adapt it as you move along.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that it would be pretty difficult for more conventional LED display companies like the, I don't need to rattle off the names, but the the major manufacturers who put billboards up in Times Square and mm-hmm. on the sides of stadiums, but it's not part of the architecture. It attaches to the architecture. It would be difficult for them to get into this because you've got a massive head start.
Yeah, I think it would be very difficult. I mean, also there's a mindset that goes along with it. I mean, we don't choose the path of least resistance. I think the people that work here would get bored. But at the same time, you have to evolve over years, tool sets in order to even accomplish these very difficult geometries, because everything needs to support it from the back as well. You have to be able to do proper wiring diagrams and power layouts and all this, because it affects the entire architecture of that building.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing it by choice, let's put it this way.
Right. I have seen, I saw one last week on LinkedIn, a company that's made a sphere. It was like, 25 feet tall or something like that. But they're marketing
I saw it
as a product. mm-hmm. How do you react to those things?
Yeah, well, I mean, I I guess I'll go with the with the analogy of like, you know, trying to copy something is flattery. Again, it's not the first time that these types of things happen. Obviously, it's not on the same scale as the Sphere, but I mean, year after year, we see people trying to copy what we've done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can't be easy. I'm also curious in terms of media facades about glass and the yes. use of LED within glass or applied mm-hmm. to glass in some way. Is that something that you're being asked about doing?
Yeah, so actually many, many years ago, we actually designed some technology and actually have a patent for LEDs within glass. And we actually tried it out. And in concept, it sounds like a great idea, but in practice, it's not that great of an idea, as we found out. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is there's a couple things. First of all, if you need to replace something, you now need to pull the glass off of the building.
Yeah.
Which could affect the tenants inside. If it's a hotel, it's a hotel. If it's, you know what I mean? If it's an office mm-hmm. building, it's an office building. You now replace the glass. But the other thing that it did is that it could have potentially put us in competition with some of our clients, which are the curtain wall manufacturers. And okay. we work with all of them. So if we were to come up with our own glass product and we were to try to go sell it, we're essentially either aligning ourselves with only one of them or we're competing against all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we had decided against that, but the serviceability of it was the bigger problem.
Yeah. What the company, where are you at now in terms of headcount and where you're located and everything?
Yeah, so we're in Montreal still. I mean, we're just across the street from our old facility, which we were there for 35 years, and we're now in this beautiful 218,000 square foot facility that we got into, you know, obviously with Sphere and other projects in mind. And we're 120 people strong, and when we're full project involved, like with Sphere, we grew to about 380. So we scale up and we scale down depending on the projects, and we have arrangements with different companies for that. And and that's where we are now.
Is it hard to be that elastic in terms of your workforce, given you know the challenges of hiring?
Well, the pandemic certainly tested us. I mean, we've never had issues with it before. The pandemic was made it a bit more difficult. But the way that we design our manufacturing, all of our testing. I mean, we have a lot of electronic aids and stuff like that. And the core people that we have here can be split up to become team leads. So mm-hmm. When we hire people, it's for the lower skill positions.
Right.
So it's easier. You have a bigger pool to choose from. And then after that, we scale back down when we don't need to do that anymore. And then our core workforce takes on all the responsibility.
Right. Okay. So these could be like logistics people who are just packing things up and so on.
Correct. Exactly.
I assume you're NDA'd up the wazoo on a lot of projects, but are there mm-hmm. ones that you can talk about that will be released in the next year or so?
So I can't really talk about them, but I can tell. But I can tell you that we're building a beautiful project in Spain. After having an office there for I don't know how many years, finally we get to do a project in Spain, and that's very exciting.
What part of Spain?
In Valencia.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah, so right near the sea and stuff like that. So I can't say what it is yet, but it's going to be beautiful. And as I mentioned, we literally just delivered Morgan Wallen last week, and that's pretty exciting as well.
And is it what has the past couple of years meant for the company in terms of business? Has it just like rocketed, or is it just seen like a nice healthy bump?
Yes. Well, actually, it was. I'm going to say it's going to be a controlled rocketed because we. well, again, dealing with the pandemic is one thing, and then supply chain and all that kind of stuff. But yeah. The other thing that we needed to be very disciplined about is to not take on too much work, as to not affect the delivery of the Sphere. And that was on purpose. And we had spoken with our customers and our architects and stuff like that. And we were very selective in the projects that we took on during the big delivery of Sphere. Thankfully, though, the pandemic did push a bunch of the projects into the future. So now those projects are coming back to us now. And we have a lot of bandwidth. And we're filling that up pretty fast.
I suspect as well that the simple fact that you've delivered this and it's got the global attention that it has certainly made your architecture partners and other potential customers very comfy that, yeah, you can do this.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, and at the same time, we're not just a one-trick pony. I mean, we did deliver a very large project at Orlando Airport at the same time, and yep. Delta Airfield at the JFK and a bunch of other projects, the Rolling Stones and Lady Gaga and all those. So we continue doing everything kind of as an undertow, but Sphere was a really big focus. And now that we're finished delivering Sphere, we're now working on many other very exciting projects.
I'm sure there's lots of day-to-day headaches in terms of being a CEO of a technology company, but it sounds like you get some pretty fun road trips with all these touring acts and big venues.
Yeah, yes, and you get to you get to meet very interesting people and like-minded people, and you get to see behind the scenes, it's a lot of work. There's no doubt about it. I mean, every day we're trying to do something different and do something new. So you're always kind of like in that development mode, but when you see the results and then you see the teams that you're building and the culture that you're building within the company, it kind of makes you proud and makes it fun to be here.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations on the product or the project and everything else that's going on with you.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 69, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the archive and find hundreds of conversations with smart industry people. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 169 at 16-9.net. You'll find more than 8,000 posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. 169 is not a press release republishing mill like a lot of this stuff out there. If something makes it on 169, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 69 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and the key one here is ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Check out all the curated and automated content available at ScreenFeed.com. 69, the blog, and the podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which does customer engagement solutions, most of that digital signage, for all kinds of businesses. You'll find them in the Tampa area and online at Spectrio. That's Spectrio.com. You'll find me working out of a sunny back room in my house located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.